Majak's back. The feel-good story of the year comes to life as Majak Dawes' return puts everything into perspective. Rule-breaking journalist. Find out which AFL media expert was stood down and called back upon after a social media misunderstanding. Perfect 10. Luke Ryan notches up 10 coaches' votes, putting himself in All-Australian contention. And just a few days out from the mouth-watering waffle fixture on everyone's minds, perhaps the greatest ever waffle player we've seen, three-time Subiaco Premiership captain, champion on bowler, and former Gold Coast Sun Kyle Horsley joins myself, Ethan Roth, to run through his 14-game stint at the Suns and finishing runner-up in the Sandover three times, only on the Centre Square podcast.
And I declare the winner of the 2019 Brownlow Medal, Nathan Clark of the Fremantle Football Club.
Shade from the mound. Needs to be his perfect years. He's got the most impossible goal. From inside the centre square, Boyce kicked the goal. Boyce kicked the goal.
There's Dave. And he's somehow got a handball to Horsley, who somehow gets free and kicks from 50 metres. Again, the Suns. A goal from nothing. Fantastic footy from the Gold Coast.
G'day everyone and welcome to the Centre Square podcast right here on 91.3 Sport FM, your football headquarters. The footy continues on. We're nearing the end of round 10 in the AFL and are already one third of the way through the waffle season. Bit of a weird feeling today. Only myself, Ethan Roth and out of the boys. They'll be back next week from other commitments and whatnot. Nevertheless, it promised to be a jam-packed show. Beginning with that, I've got a very special guest joining me in the studio today. Someone that a lot of our previous guests have brought up and at one point and have said that they are of influence. Four-time Subiaco Best and Fairest, three-time Waffle Premiership Captain, 2018 Simpson Medalist. He's come runner-up in the Sandover three times. Also spending some time at AFL level, he was taken with the second pick in the 2012 Rookie Draft where he's played... We played 14 games across two seasons for the Gold Coast Suns. He is often regarded as the best player the Waffles ever seen. It's easy to see why with those accolades. And if you haven't already, get down and see him play. But I welcome Kyle Horsley. Kyle, thanks for coming on the show. Much appreciated.
Cheers, Ethan, mate. Thanks for having me. Kind words.
Absolute pleasure to have you involved. And how today will work is we'll have the questions at the start, followed by In Strife and the votes for the Centre Square Player of the Year. And then last but not least, a quiz on yourself, Kyle, where we'll see how much you know about your own stats from 10 questions. No tipping this week. All the boys' tips were up on the Instagram and Facebook stories, as well as what they all exactly sit on. Now, Kyle, in case you already didn't know, what we like to do with all our guests is take them back to the start, where everything all began. For you, you were born and raised in Kalgoorlie. Tell us about your life growing up playing all sports, not only footy but hockey and cricket at pretty good levels.
I was born in Perth. Parents moved down to Kalgoorlie when I was two. So, yeah, obviously a great town to grow up. I think anyone in small country towns understands that you sort of play every sport and that's how you fill your time. And, yeah, great feeling of community. And, yeah, I think you sort of mould your work ethic and all that in sort of country atmosphere. And, yeah, really fortunate to... grown up in that town, and I've already forgotten the question, so that's how we're going.
Yeah, so you're pretty good at all sports, so was it just mainly footy that you focused on, or was it sort of all and then you drifted lately?
Yeah, I tell the boys this all the time, but I mainly played hockey till I was 16, and then I sort of got burnt out with hockey because my family's a big hockey family, field hockey family. No ice hockey in Kalgoorlie, it's too warm. But yeah, so we played there until I was 16, but I started when I was really young, and by the time I got to about 16, 17, I was really burnt out with playing hockey, and then all my mates were playing footy, and I sort of started playing when I was 13, 14, but only really picked it up and, you know, showed up to every game probably from the age of 16, 17, and yeah, loved it. Loved the physicality of it and the team environment. You know, there's a lot of passion in country towns, and it's you're playing for sheep stations most of the time, even though you play the same teams every couple of weeks. Yeah. It feels like big rivalries and stuff. So I really got swept up in that, and got really fortunate to got asked to come down and train at Subiaco, and then showed up down in Perth, and yeah, have a look back.
Yeah, footy is really important down there because you know it's one of the only main sort of things. And interesting you say about hockey, it's not very popular sport here over here in Perth. I know you know, it's a good sport, but you got footy and that. So after playing in the Goldfields League, you were the best player there at just 16, despite wanting to remain in Kalgoorlie. Subiaco recruited you, which you just said. Were you unsure at the time, and what was it like going from a place like Kalgoorlie, pretty local, where everyone would know each other, to the city life?
Yeah, so the transfer to the city was made really easy. I think a few of my mates around me, like Rob Forrest, Michael Waddington, they were good mates of mine, and they'd moved up, and so they'd already created their own network of friends, and then obviously I moved up and just sort of hung out with that group of people, so it made the transition really easy, and really thankful to end up at a club like Subiaco. It was really really welcoming, and they sort of, everyone sort of given an opportunity. There's no tiers of people, there's no big dogs and little dogs, everyone sort of just treated equally and respected the same. It makes, you know, from young kid from the bush, you know, makes the transition so easy. And I do remember my first training session at Subi, we finished the warm up, and I thought that was the full session done. That's the difference in levels it was from country country to city. I was ready to pack up and take my boots off and go for a shower, but that was only the warm-up done, so it was a rude shock. But I think you know, boys really help you through it and sort of teach you about professionalism and how you got to prepare, just to not only play but mainly just to train and make sure you're actually up to the level and the standard. And yeah, so a lot of things sort of fell my way at the start and made it really easy and sort of kept me focused and you know, wanting to strive.
Yeah, big step up. So you settled in pretty well, making your debut for Subi in round 16 of the 2007 season, and then in 2008 won the Rising Star and Best First Year Player. Did you feel like you didn't have to adapt too much to the big bodies because you already had that experience in the Goldfields? And talk us through playing for the state team against Queensland in Townsville as well.
Yeah, so yeah, absolutely, it helps when you grow up in country towns, and generally the better kids who are younger will go up and play league just to fill the numbers and obviously get the opportunity. So you're around, you know, some really, really good footballers. I think the top echelon of players are, you know, good waffle players and some elite waffle players. So you're getting around them bigger bodies, really hard physical men early. So when you do transition up to league footy in the city, you're sort of not blown away by the size of guys who are on, you know, not full-time weights programs, but are on really solid weights programs and a step up from that country level. I've gone blank again.
So 2007, 2008,
full
seasons.
Yeah. So adapting to league football in 07 was really easy because I just played a small forward role and Scotty used to just give me a role to chase someone around, and then I transitioned into tagging, so made that easy as well. It was more of the athletic viewpoint of just trying to stick with blokes, and that was my only focus. And then obviously the quality of players we had around us was pretty incredible, and made my job really easy as a young fella coming through. I didn't have to do anything push and try to get a kicker myself to, you know, solidify my spot. It was sort of, this is your role, fill this, and you'll play every week, and that's how it worked out. And yeah, the state game was a huge thrill. Going over to Queensland, playing with a group of guys who, you know, you play against and you have your own opinions about what they're like, and so it's always completely wrong. Yeah. And most people in footy clubs are really good people, and I think you find that every time in any sort of either development group or state training group, when you're with a group of guys from other clubs that you have opinions of, you find that you're way off the mark, and they're all usually pretty good blokes, which actually makes it harder to play against them next time you have to play.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's sort of, even though you verse them in the waffle, when you're versing other states, it's you against them, isn't it?
Yeah, you create that sort of that bond, and you sort of make that your purpose and that your drive, and then, you know, you're with it with the, it's generally 30 blokes, and then it gets cut down to about 23-24, but yeah, that's your one motivation, your drive, and it gives you that unique bond with that group of guys.
And not many people would be aware that you trained with Fremantle Dockers prior to 2008. How was this, and were you ever a chance to get picked up by them, or was it more just an experience and some extra workload to add?
Hey, you done your research. That was a great experience. So obviously you hope to, and I tried my hardest to impress him, but I think Brad Dalziel was there at the time, and he's a freak runner, sort of blew me away how good of a runner he was. So we're doing all this stuff and I'd be going all right, and then we'd have to break off and do a couple of 1Ks or a few 500s, and Dizzy would put, you know, a couple of 100 metres on me and sort of extinguish my chances of getting picked up by Freo. And so, yeah, cheers, mate. But yeah, great experience to see what it was like to be at that level and see how scientific and professional it all is, and sort of how they base all their training and their workloads. Yeah, so it was a great insight.
Yeah, definitely would have helped. So fast tracking to the breakout that was 2011. The side started to regain its mojo, although it was never really gone. You made a grand final, unfortunately losing to Claremont, who seemed unstoppable back then. They were a strong force. How did you take your game to the next level, and did you give yourself any chance on Stand Overnight or even when it come to the Outridge medal?
2011. Well, I was playing back flank, back pocket, sort of rebound to defender, and sort of all changed at about round 8, round 9. I think we were struggling a little bit, and then Muddy Waterman decided to just throw him in the middle and see what can happen. And luckily at that stage, Big Michael Ricks was getting his hand on everything, so it was a pretty easy role to play. Yeah. And I had a really good relationship with Ricksy, so he looked after me. He used to make me go to and put at the spots where whoever I was my direct opponent just couldn't cover because of how good his tap work was. So really fortunate in that. And then fortunately for me as well, the team's momentum built. So, you know, I got to stay in there. I was sort of don't want to change anything around and throw me back. And obviously playing in a midfield role, you get a lot more of the ball, and it's you sort of get to hunt a bit more and play that sort of game style, which, you know, pad your numbers a bit and probably makes you look like you're having more impact than what you are. And as far as Sand Overnight went, it wasn't, you know, didn't think I was a chance at all, because I knew how the start of the season, my start of the year was, and I think Luke Blackwell was absolutely freak, and I thought he'd win it by the length of the straight because of how good of a footballer he was. And yeah, so the Outridge medal, I thought I was a chance then. Yeah, I knew I had a really good year, and obviously surprised and really honoured to have won it that year.
Yeah, absolutely. So speculated as either a likely selection in the standard draft or rookie draft. What were the conversations with the Suns like? Obviously, they were coming off their first year and were looking to add some maturity. So describe the emotions when you found out they had taken you, and where were you at the time? Because I don't think the rookie draft is telecasted.
No, I was at work on the tools. I didn't actually have many conversations with Gold Coast. I think they rang me the day before, really brief, couple-minute chat, and that was it. And then, next day took me in the rookie draft. I tell all the boys I was picked 2 in the draft and leave the rookie bit out. But, so obviously, huge thrill and honour. I think one of my mates actually texted me first because I was at work, and I didn't want to get my hopes up, and I was trying to just play it down. And then, got a text through Gold Coast boy or something like that. So, yeah. I realised then that I'd been picked up by him, and really stoked and honoured and really proud. So.
Yeah, the phone must have been blowing up after that.
Yeah, it's always good, isn't it? You know, other people sort of get that really emotional rush with you, and it makes you, really proud moment.
And it would have gone really fast, I imagine, but what at that moment did it mean to you or feel like that now that you're an AFL player?
I hadn't done much running after the break, so the first moment I was so stoked and thrilled, and then the second one was like, oh, I've probably underdone it here. I'm going to show up. These blokes have been training for, a month now, and I'm going to be so far off the pace. But, fortunately, it got really looked after when you got there. I think the new guys they draft, they sort of really break in slowly until Christmas, and then ramp up after that. So my fear of where I was at probably didn't play out, so that was good.
Yeah, and they were still building a club as well, so that would have helped. But it didn't take long to get elevated to the senior list, and then you made your debut against North Melbourne at Docklands. Did you feel any pressure replacing Gary Ablett? And what do you remember from that impressive day when you had 19 disposals and 8 tackles?
I was pretty lucky. I actually replaced Jared Harbrow. So he got, I think he hurt his elbow or shoulder and got taken off the senior list. So yeah. I was feeling them shoes. I didn't worry about Gaz. there's some people who's just levels above anyone else you've ever seen. So you don't want to be trying to make up for that absence. But yeah, I think at that stage, we probably knew where we were at, having Gary out of the side. Obviously, you don't talk about it openly, but I think it was probably an expectation that if we can be competitive against him, it would go a long way to really driving the young boys and their standards. And thankfully, we were till half time. But then I think North Melbourne sort of maybe took us a bit light in that first half, might have got a cook at half time and come out and really whacked us off the park in that second half. But it was a huge thrill. Had my family over, best mate, boss now, Michael Waddington, come over. And yeah, so it was a really good moment, really special.
Yeah, sometimes that can be better as well when a key player's out, the younger players or inexperienced players can step up. But 13 games in total in 2012, and you awarded the most professional and Ironman awards at the Club Champion Night. Did you get a sense then that you belonged at that level and that you could have a lengthy career ahead of you with the impact you were able to have?
Nah, absolutely not. I don't think, nowhere near thinking I belonged at the level. I was still overawed, and I think every time you step out there, especially because we're a young developing team, we took some really heavy losses, and it feels like you're working as hard as you can, and you can't impact the game at all because, A, the team's probably not up to it at that stage, and B, you as an individual, you're not Gary Ablett. You can't just flick a switch and turn an AFL game. So, yeah, a lot of good levelers. I think I was going all right, playing well, and I got told to move on to Travis Boak to lock him down, and kept him to 10 and 2 goals, and then quarter time blew, and And I got moved off him pretty quick because he was about to have 40 and kick eight. So
during his peak as well.
So. Yeah, it was a quick. Oh, he's playing pretty well now, which is good. But yeah, quick learning experience of where you're at when you're playing, you know, the actual guns of the comp, and they sort of, you know, just leave you in their dust.
Yeah, it would have been really tough to be at the Suns at that stage. Obviously, you would have been like grateful for the opportunity, but it just must have been so hard because you're losing every week, and there probably wasn't a lot of hope.
Yeah, the hardest thing wasn't the losing every week, and the hope, there was heaps of hope there because I was training with guys like Dion Pressier, Dave Swallow, Harley Bunnell, Jago Mira wasn't on the list then, but he was he'd been guaranteed to get drafted. I don't know how it all that works, yeah, priority picks.
I think it was like the mini draft or something like that.
Yeah, all that stuff. But he was there training, and these guys are freaks, and you know, it was sort of, when I didn't get a game, barely got a game the second year, you know, you couldn't even argue because these guys had so much talent that you knew they were going to be such good footballers. Like Josh Caddy then was inside mid and playing really well, and then obviously had Riscatelli and Gary Ablett. And so there was actually a really good nucleus of players, but AFL was such a tough competition that until they develop their body and sort of have that team ethos and all players, you know, as one big unit instead of the individuals, then you're going to suffer really heavy losses against experienced teams, and that's what occurred. But there was always hope there because you're watching these guys at training getting blown away by, you know, just the level of ability they have, and sort of wishing that, you know, you could somehow fast track and get on their level. But you know, their talent was incredible.
Yeah. Where was I? I was thinking about something. It'll get back to me. But of course, it wasn't all good. You were on the receiving end of a GWS Giants first ever win. Was there ever any comparisons internally to the Giants as you were both the new kids on the block? And what do you think the Gold Coast didn't do right or got wrong that have led to the unsuccess that they've had as opposed to the Giants?
Yeah, obviously, yeah. Well, they come onto the block, and I think it was the first time we played them when they got a hold of us. And yeah, you could tell the difference. I remember Bluey after the game was fuming. I don't think he talked to anyone for, you know, the whole plane ride home. He was that wild about it. And I think everyone was so disappointed. And but, you know, they were really good that day, really contested brand of football, which we probably didn't expect, and they were really strong on the inside, and obviously they had all the talent on the outside. And as far as the success goes, I think people forget that GWS had two drafts while Gold Coast had one. So they had two drafts. They could stock up on talent in the first draft and then trade off picks for future talent or players in the next draft, while Gold Coast only had the one crack at it. I mean, that's a huge advantage over the top of Gold Coast had. And I think the AFL set it up so Western Sydney wouldn't be as, you know, inviting to players already established in the comp, so they'd give them extra. Gold Coast, really great place to live, incredible weather, a lot to do. The Gold Coast would find it easier to get players out of Melbourne and players living there. And worked out that the drive of the big games of the MCG and the big clubs in Melbourne probably strengthened over that period, and the Gold Coast Football Club wasn't able to attract that many of the established really good players, and GWS used their picks and traded really well. And you know, they've obviously got the incredible leaders there. The young blokes, they've gone through under the older blokes, and, you know, they're in really good shape. This year, they're struggling a bit, but I think they've turned a corner as well. So hopefully they can push for that flag.
Yeah, it looks promising. I gathered the thought that I was thinking of. Campbell Brown, we spoke to him over the phone during the COVID break, and he said that the 2011 season when he was there was really good because everything was new, but 2012, 2013 was really hard. That sort of brought back memories from that. But only one more game that came in 2013 because of a sustained ACL. Bit of a sour subject, but what was it like getting delisted, getting told that your dream is over? And did it seem a bit stiff at all, considering it wasn't necessarily your form that cost you?
Well, I had on the one game, I got me one game, played a sub, come on in the last quarter and then dropped next week. So that was pretty devastating, but that's the way it was at the time with the sub rule and the opportunity you were given. And then with the delisting, after I did my ACL, I think I, you know, really come to terms with the fact that, you know, I think I was 25, turning 26, or 25 and the next year I was going to be 26. Guys come back from ACL so different. They had to cut their list back. So I sort of had a long time to process the fact that, you know, I was probably staring down getting delisted. Obviously, sitting in the room with Guy or Bluey and him telling, you know, saying the words, still really it really hurt. But, you know, I think I had a long time to process it and sort of knew where I was at with that list and sort of understood that that's where it was going to head to. So, you know, I was in a pretty good place mentally by the time. I was in as good a place as I could be mentally to be told that, you know, you're not required at the club anymore.
Yeah, that's good. And finally, on the Gold Coast matter, do you still keep in contact with anyone there? Who are your best mates, and have you followed them at all since?
I still keep in touch with the boys. Luckily, Tom Lynch seems to be over here more than he is in Melbourne because of his connection with Della.
We had him on the other a few weeks ago. So
Tom's one of the better guys. We made big country lad. Really, just really, really good fella. I live with Jake, so I still have a really good bond with him. Harley Bunnell's obviously come back to Perth and, great guy. And Dion Prestia, a little meatball, he's a ripper as well. So, I caught up with, went to Splendor in the Grass a few years ago and I caught up with a few of the boys, caught up with Maisie and Dave Swallow. And, so it was good to see all them.
Yeah,
Danny Stanley as well, the Bull was there. So, you still keep in touch with them. But it's obviously, life gets busy, life gets tough and you sort of draw apart. But then I feel like with all good friendships, you can not talk for a year, then catch up and it all just feels good again. Exactly. So that's sort of the bond we all have.
Yeah, so returning home, was it always going to be straight back to Subin? It must have felt, been sweet to win a flag in your first year back against the Eagles aligned side on that famous wet day at Domain Stadium.
Yeah, it was always going to be straight back to Subi. I think I made Scully sweat a bit. I went over to Vegas for the boys on footy trip and obviously turned the phone off for a few weeks there and hadn't confirmed I was coming back. But, in my head, I was always going to come back and play for Subi as long as my knee allowed it. I was sort of mind made up that if I had another knee injury, that was it. I was done. It's a really tough thing to come back from mentally. So, fortunately, I haven't. And, that wet day was incredible. We're actually really bad during the year on wet days and we're really good on dry days. So when it was raining on the way to the ground, I was like, oh, we might be in a bit of trouble here because they were big, strong boys. But in the other, it actually flipped and we really played it as well as probably any wet game I've ever been involved in. And, to get that win against a team who was, they were a lot better than us. And we just sort of rode the wave of emotion. We had a big burst in the third quarter, which I think you sort of need to do on wet days. You need to pile on a couple of goals. And then we just hung on in the last quarter. And, it was an incredible feeling.
And obviously you've won a further three grand finals, but how much did the pain of losing the Peel really drive yourself and the group?
Yeah, the Peel, the first one, we probably had excuses. I think we had by grand final, so we're sort of really underdone and they were obviously an unbelievable team, so we had that excuse of if we had a fair crack at it, who knows, we're sort of a bit robbed at the fixturing. But then the next year, we had everything go away. We lost the second semi, got to that extra harden up in the prelim, and then we got them again in the grand final, and we sort of played as well as we could without finishing, and they had a lot of things go against them. I think Josh DeLuca had a corky, and it's a fullback from St Kilda and Zach Dawson and rolling his ankle and didn't play from like the first quarter, so they were chips down. I think someone else got injured as well, and they show how good of a side they were and how well Shep coached that day. They held on against all odds for them. It was all in our favour, and we weren't good enough to win that day, and that one really, really stung. It was more, I think it was the last game at Subi Oval. Rezzy's had won. It was sort of really built up like we can really send Subi Oval off the way we want to. Big party and last party in the club rooms outside of Mount Monday, but last party in the club rooms and get all the old members, all the old players back to say farewell on such a great occasion and a great occasion by winning both the reserves and league grand final. And we felt like we really let the whole club down with that moment.
Yeah, and part of that emotion, did it come from the Fremantle sort of AFL influence?
I know Jared was pretty wild after the game about it, but I think as players, you just want to play against the best, and I thought the year before if we'd had a fair crack at it, who knows what would happen. And so that year, the next following year, we get another crack and everything's gone our way, things are going against them, and it's like, this is the way we want it to be, not go against them, but we want to be able to get them while they're so strong. And unfortunately we weren't good enough and they were too good. And I think if we won a premiership against them and they were, whatever it was, the restrictions are now with like only 12 listed players, we were like, well, were we ever good enough to beat them at full strength? And we had the opportunity and we weren't, and they were too good.
Yeah, so speaking to the other Subi guys we've had on here, they all say it's an environment off the field and the professionalism. Even Jack Mayo agreed, only being at Subi for a shorter period of time. But what do you put the success of the last 4 to 5 years down to?
It's probably built on Peter German's era in, I think, 04 to 06. I think that guy's, he sort of come along and whacked everyone and made, you either buy in or you go. And a few older boys said, well, footy shouldn't be this hard. And then the younger boys really brought into that and sort of gave them a sense of purpose and drive. And the expectations from there just carried through for generation to generation. And, everyone, no one wants to be the the ones to drop the ball. And even the years where we were down, it was still there. We just had a lot of injuries. So as long as you keep that drive going and everyone sort of expects that level, and then it obviously tweaks as, you know, sport gets better and sports science becomes a lot more, you know, has a lot more answers to what actually benefits people, and, you know, you've got more facts around you, you can really drive it. And as long as you have that sort of culture of guys always wanting to push and always wanting to drive and really work each other, then, you know, success comes pretty quickly. And hopefully for years and years to come, it'll remain that way. I know the Waffle won't be too happy with that, but hopefully we can, yeah, have sustained success in that sense. And I mean, at worst, guys get the absolute best out of themselves, and if they're good enough, they'll make it. And, you know, at best, you get grand finals and premierships to form a bomb.
The game is always changing. Now, it is a team game, but you've won a Simpson medal have been runner-up in the Sandover three times. What is it that you think makes your game so attractive? And are you at all disappointed that you haven't been able to take the Sandover home? I suppose last year would have been a different, and you would have got some joy out of seeing Lachlan Delahunty come away with it.
Yeah, well, on the game, I'm pretty lucky. I play a lot of second phase, and I let the Bulls go to work inside, and they sort of do all the grunt work. And then when the ball leaves the area, you know, I sort of go from there. And I think that's really, man, it's really flashy and catches the eye. But, you know, we've got such guys, Ben Newton, Lee Kitchen, obviously Josh DeLuca, Chris Field, and over the years, guys who really thrive. Jason Bristow, who's now the midfield coach, really thrive in that area of, like, you know, they're a lot better than me at it. The contested ball inside, getting a little separation from their opponents, been really clean with their hands. So that sort of allows my game of, as soon as that ball is out of the area and I can react and go, then, you know, you get on the end of the ball, you know, bursting out of a stoppage where realistically you've done no work, you've just taken off, but it looks like you've burst out of a stoppage. So really fortunate with the game style we have and the players we have there, that, you know, I can sort of play that role. And hopefully it continues. The legs are getting a bit slower now, so I'm not getting too many out the front door like I used to, but, you know, I'll keep going for it and hopefully getting the end of it. And as far as the Sandovers and that go, I think it was incredible watching Della win it last year. I think people sort of underestimate the toll it takes on big ruckman's body, especially him, to go up against, you know, the guys who are a lot taller and probably way more than him. Not as straight, he's actually really strong for his size. It's really deceptive, but to go front up, jump into him all day, and then run around the way he does and hold that consistency and have the influence he has on games is incredible. And I thought he was going to win it last year. I didn't think I'd be anywhere near it. So I was sort of a bit embarrassed when I was in front, and he probably hadn't received many votes early in the year. But then when he was coming home, I knew the way he finished, and I sort of thought, yeah, he'll win this. And, you know, he absolutely deserves it. He's an incredible footballer and done a lot for our footy club since the moment he walked in.
Yeah, you're right. Probably doesn't get enough credit that he deserves, but we always like to bring up coaches' sprays here. Are there any good coaches' sprays that you've got or seen someone caught from, either Jared Schofield, Scott Waters, Chris Waterman, Guy McKenna, or even Bo Waterman?
Yeah, I've seen a few, mainly all from Scully, but generally all pretty funny. I think Locke's ruled out with a little hamstring. I don't know if you like me telling this, actually, but he's ruled out with a little hamstring, and Locke's, I think he thought he could play, so he was sooking up a bit in the team meeting, and he was sitting behind me, so I couldn't see him. But apparently he had head down, having a bit of Jordan time, really upset. And I think Jared was, I think we might have been playing someone he wanted to be wound up for, so he was pretty intense. And then he must have caught eyes with Locks and saw him sooking, and then he just breaks into a little wah, 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 and throwing his arms around everywhere, carrying on. And then a few expletives in there, and pretty much told him that it wasn't all about him, and it's over, mate, you're not playing, you're done, stop sooking. And yeah, that was that sort of nickname stuck with given a bit to opponents here, but that nickname stuck with Locks for a while. Wow, wow, wow. So yeah, that, there's a few others, but they're that one's the main one that we sort of bring up all the time. And that's actually, it's, I hope the spray continues from coaches, because the times we probably share the most in the change rooms is when we're laughing about the, like, you know, a couple of months down the track, we're laughing about the sprays that were given to players and how they reacted. And yeah, so that always, you know, the boys are generally, you know, in tears laughing when we're reenacting all the Scully sprays. And it really sort of, I don't know, it's a really good part of footy. As intimidating as at the time, you know, it comes from a good, it comes from you, and you perform at a level that brings a win, that gets a win for the team. So, you know, you sort of understand where it's coming from, even if sometimes you don't agree with it.
Yeah, it's definitely good. But before we get into this year, you were the captain there for several years. Talk us through your leadership, and then changing from the number one to 28 in memory of your late teammate Shane Yaron. How much does it mean to you to pull on that each week and honour Shane and his family?
Yeah, my leadership style, I guess, I'm not my most young leaders, was more about what I could the way I trained and how I went about it, and that was the leadership I, you know, I wanted to implement from myself, and sort of you know, that sort of follow me sort of aspect. But then as I grew and worked with Kelly Properjohn now and Wayne Orsi before, it became more about empowering other people and making them into, you know, you can't have one person leading, it needs to be a whole group of people, so really empowering everyone around you. And I think that's something we're really fortunate about at the club. We have a lot of really good leaders, a lot of guys who have that quality. So if you empower them and you allow them to grow and take control, you know, it's a huge benefit to firstly them as individuals, but then obviously the collective group, because the more voices coming from, you know, the more people are going to respond to it, because, you know, we sort of follow, you know, groups and a lot of people driving the same message. It makes it a lot easier for that message to be understood and believed from everyone around you. And yeah, so I was really fortunate in that sense. And then obviously, you know, having Jarrett Schofield, who was an incredible leader as well, just echoing everything he said and driving that, and just almost blind faith into the message that he was trying to get across. And fortunately, it worked really well for us. And yeah, with Shane and his family, I think that move was from 1 to 28. Obviously, the captain at Subiaco tradition has the one, so yeah. I was stood down from captain and let Lee take over. Well, didn't let Lee. Lee got voted in because he's an incredible leader. He took over as captain, and then obviously with the passing of Shane and how much he meant to us as a club and how, you know, how much we all loved him and, you know, his family and Christy and just wanted to honour his name. And yeah, obviously I don't do what Shane could do. I can't sit on heads. I can't kick miraculous goals, and I'm definitely nowhere near as quick as Shane, so I don't honour him in that aspect. But to wear his jumper and to sort of show the courage and play with the pride I had for him and try emulate, you know, how much he meant to us every week is, yeah, something that really drives me.
Yeah, it was really talented and really good what you're doing. So how did you react to COVID-19? What did you get up to or cope with? Or how did you cope within the small group situation?
Yeah, I was really fortunate. I'm an electrician, so we didn't have to stop work. We really pushed through, and we actually got really busy at that stage. So I sort of really sheltered from it. And I think what you see with this, see what's going on in Victoria now, was sort of obviously extremely fortunate over here. But that sort of didn't cross my mind because I was so sheltered. My life, I actually got busier with work, and you saw the less people in the streets. But as far as, you know, correct impact on me, it didn't really have any. So I was really fortunate in that sense. And the small groups was really tough. I think, you know, you go from seeing 60 blokes and all the coaches, and you're sort of in the gym all together, and you're out in the track, and you know, sort of routine and yeah, like it's just easy to focus, easy to be around people. To, you know, you jump out of your car, you bring your own water bottles, you train, you don't touch each other, the ball gets flicked around, and then you're straight off the ground in the car and away. It was a really weird situation. You sort of lost that. It's just that took a bit of naan to the boys and really relax and sort of, you know, flesh out your day and your life. It's almost therapy footy clubs. You sort of roll in, you talk about everything going on, everything. You know, you sort of air all your thoughts and your grievances, but then, you know, you do it with a bunch of blokes who you become your best mates and on trying to work to something. So you're all, you know, really bonded, and you work really hard in everything you do there, and have that stripped away, and then, you know, going back to small groups where you barely hung out and you barely chatted, so there, footy, home, sort of lost the really enjoyable aspect of it. So really tough in that sense. But, you know, we're so fortunate to have a season, and I think to the WA public, and, you know, I think Mark McGowan's going to have statues built around the town everywhere, the way he's handled it and how much he's been for WA. I think we all understand. I'm seeing now what's happening, incredibly fortunate we are, and to have everyone buy in and sort of, I do remember walking through the city and people would almost cross the road to not be in contact. That's how seriously we all took it. And I think, you know, that sort of selflessness as a community really held us in good stead, and I think we were led really well, and the community should be really proud of the way we acted during the spread of COVID-19.
Yeah, so 1-1 is where you sit at the moment. A cruisy win over Swan Districts on the weekend. You managed to slot two goals yourself. You must be really looking forward to the clash with South Fremantle this week. You've with them over the years. So what are the focus heading into that? And what do you think the keys are to coming away with the points in this reduced season?
Yeah, really, really looking forward to playing South. Obviously, get another look at where we're at. We played Claremont, who we thought would be a really strong side, and they've proven that up and dominated the middle and took their chances and got a pretty comfortable win in the end. I think we sort of kicked a couple late to bring it down, but there was, you know, it was a 30-40 point win for majority of that last quarter. And obviously South Rio, right now the benchmark and the best team in the comp. So see where we sit at this stage of the season, and that sort of gives us a launching pad to know how hard we have to work and what areas we have to work on to be able to compete with the best. And they're good everywhere. I think the way they control the footy and their back line sets up so well, their midfield probably unheralded, but they're as good as any midfield in the comp. And and their forward line, with obviously Sleuthy spending a bit more time up there, is that bit of class up at the delivering the ball inside 50, and Macy Miller, and then the bigger boys up there are just they're a handful. So we know we'll have to be at our best, and hopefully that's good enough. But if it's not, then at least we have a launching pad to see what we have to improve on and where we have to get to make sure that we can have an impact come September.
Yeah, absolutely. So you turned 33 in just under a month's time and have played 204 games of waffle footy, which is a great achievement. How long can you keep going for, and what does the post-career look like for Kyle Horsley?
I don't know. The 10-month pre-season sort of rocked me. It's sort of incredibly draining to sort of maintain that sort of intensity without having games to strive for. And so it's made it a bit tougher mentally. So obviously I'll just let the season play out and then just see where I'm at mentally and physically, and if there is still the drive there to keep going on. Hopefully there is, but again, until the season ends and you sort of sit down and reflect and talk to my partner Amy and see where we're at and see where I'm at, we'll decide whether I play again. And as far as the future goes, I'd love to get into coaching or something to do with leadership at any club at a waffle level. I think I'd struggle at amateurs with, I sort of need, can be pretty angry, so I sort of need people that are really driven and want to be there. And good mates of mine, Wade Toomey and Scott Worthington, are coaching at Scarborough at the moment, and they're sort of struggling with that. It's amateur footy, so getting guys to training consistently and sort of driving that message can be really difficult. And I don't know if I've got the personality type of them boys to be able to deal with that and sort of not make an ass of myself. So hopefully at a waffle level, I can continue in a coaching capacity or even leadership and stuff and be involved in it, because I love footy, and waffle's done so much for me and given me so much. So hopefully stay involved.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But you're wearing the electrician gear. So what I wanted to ask was the long, tiring days. You also work on the weekend a bit and then go to footy, I think.
Yeah, you've done your research.
I think one of the super, it might have been Litherland or Marsh or even Kitchen said, because you've been brought up many times. So how does that go when you have to work and then go to footy, so with your preparation?
It's actually, weirdly, it's almost easier. You sort of, cause you're not sitting at home stewing. I mean, when I don't work, I clean the house. so getting the brownie books with my partner. But because I think otherwise you just sit there, you're doing nothing all day. Mm. Sitting, nothing worse than sitting on the couch pre-game, because you just become lethargic. So when you, the early start's a bit annoying, but I think once you sort of get used to that, you just get up, go to work, you knock off at 10:30, 11, home, quick shower, something to eat, to footy, and then you're in football mode. It's actually like almost a secret weapon you have, because you don't stew over games, you don't overthink it. You sort of you're only thinking about footy when you're there, and the rest of the time you've got something else to fuel your mind and sort of not wear you down and become so mentally drained or even physically drained. Sitting on a couch, tightening up your hip flexors is never good preparation.
Yeah. It's time now, though, for the Centre Square Player of the Year votes from round 9, which seems a long time ago now, since the Bulldogs-Richmond game. I think there's a game as we speak right now in the AFL, but 3 votes. We've all agreed for Dustin Martin. He had 26 disposals, kicked 3 goals, 1, 8 inside 50s. It was vintage Dusty, bringing back flashes of 2017. He made everyone look like around him look like kids. 2 votes. Not sure. I wasn't sure about this one, but the other boys really keen on it. Luke Ryan, 25 disposals, 7 marks, with 2 of them contested, was the main reason Freo's upset, where they weren't expected to win, and he was just rock solid across halfback and is in all Australian form. 1 vote. Lockie Neal probably won't lose the award from here. Just about has got a vote every week and is rocketing into the teens on the ladder. 2 goals, 33 possessions, 5 marks, and wasn't much Essendon could do to stop him. As for the unlucky to miss, there were some very unlucky ones. Jack McRae, again, another one we say a lot. 37 disposals, 114 fantasy. Tom Mitchell recovered some form. Paddy Cripps, Jack Gunston, Luke McDonald got a career high in 35. Jed Anderson, Luke Parker, Mitch Duncan, Josh Kennedy, a bag of 4. Dom Sheed, Lockie Whitfield, who was around the mark last week, Josh Kelly, Jacob Hopper, and then also still side bottom in his return. Darcy Moore, who you could say nullified Fife, and then Matt Taverner to round it out. We'll move on to In Strife, and Kyle, it's pretty much anyone in the footy industry under the pump, so feel free to chip anything in if there's someone at training or just something you can think of along the way, but I'll get started. Mitch Cleary, the AFL journalist and member of AFL.com's AFL Exchange podcast, he lost his job for tweeting about Brooke Cotchin and the wife of Richmond skipper Trent, who shared a social media that, shared on social media that she had broken COVID restrictions, even though AFL media weren't supposed to name who was involved in the $45,000 fine. Luckily for him, he's back, but a really bad judgment on his behalf, which is hard to understand considering he's in the forefront of AFL media. Not sure if you saw that one, but
Heard about it. Yeah, I saw that. I guess you don't want it to be a witch hunt with people going around trying to, you know, hunt people down for being outside. But, you know, it's a $1 billion industry. You can be brought undone with one positive test. So it's newsworthy. And, yeah, it was a bit harsh to lose his job. But it reinstated. Yeah. I think it must have been slam the hand down on the table sort of moment. A couple of expletives, get rid of him. And then, you know, once the dust settled, bring him back. Because, a bit ridiculous.
Yeah. This segment's sort of equivalent to like fines, you know, when you get fines. So is that a thing at Subi where you, like, someone does something stupid or just like...
It used to be. We sort of haven't done a fines night for a very long time, but years ago, Aiden Park used to run it. My favourite time of the week, actually. You hear what the boys have been up to on the weekend and all the stupid stuff they did. So, yeah, very enjoyable.
Yeah. Secondly, Nathan Buckley and assistant coach Brendan Sanderson, who were caught playing tennis with an outside member. If the people at the top can't get it right, then how are the rest meant to follow? Not sure if this had any reason towards the loss to Fremantle, but they were both slapped with $25,000 fines. Just not ideal in that sense. Do you think it would have affected the loss to Freo?
No, I don't think so. The way Nathan handled it, sort of just copped it on the chin, said we're in the wrong. I think, you know, that washes really well with the players. So, no, I don't think it would have had any bearing on the game. I think Freo just played exceptionally well that day, and, you know, their style really, really worked well against Collingwood. They sort of kept them low scoring early, where Collingwood usually burst out of the blocks, and then sort of built that home ground advantage, which we're really fortunate to have in Perth, and have 30,000 people cheering at home in the dying stages, and finished their work well. So it was a great win for the club, and I think Freo sort of needed that. They needed a couple of wins to really build that confidence.
They're 3-6 now, but it's an amazing stadium, Optus. You played there in grand finals. Just what is it like?
Yeah, it's really intimidating. So it's like a big coliseum. It sort of
goes straight up,
doesn't it? Yeah. I was fortunate enough to play at the MCG at my time at Gold Coast, and Optus is a lot more intimidating, a lot louder. I mean, we only had probably 20,000 there. There wasn't huge crowds for Gold Coast, but I think we only played at Optus with 20,000, and the sound is like, you feel like there's 50,000 people right next to you screaming. It's sort of really deafening, and they designed it that way, and it's so impressive.
And finally, not really an In Strife, more of just a message to all the people that read off Majak Dawe playing ever again. It was great to see him out there and just playing. We know the struggles he's had in his long journey from about 2 years ago, but he took some good marks, and the highlight was that goal where all his teammates got around him, and he did a big fist pump in celebration. So
yeah, really uplifting, wasn't it, to see Big Maj back. He's an absolute specimen, and if anyone could do it, it'd be him. But yeah, incredible story, and to go through obviously the lows and lows that he was in, and to get back playing AFL, and hopefully he's turned a corner, and his life's in a good headspace now.
Dermot Barron was quite emotional. Obviously meant a lot to different people, but we're nearing the end of the episode, but this is exciting. Kyle, I'm going to ask you 10 questions about your waffle and AFL career to do with your stats, games, teammates, etc., and you're going to answer as best as you can. So
I could go duck eggs here.
All right. So, they're a mix of hard and easy questions, but I tried to sort of mix it up as best as possible. So this one, I'm expecting you'll get it, but what is your listed height and weight on the official waffle website?
Oh, I don't know. I probably lied about both. I'm guessing 182 centimetres.
It was 183.
Oh, I would have lied about that then.
And the kilos?
84, 85.
85 it was. You'll give you a mark there. So that's question two now. So you were taken with pick 2 in the 2012 rookie draft, or draft. As you like to say. Who was taken ahead of you with pick 1?
Oh, I was on the tool, so I actually don't know. Oh, was Zorko taken?
Wasn't. No. I'll give you a clue. So
he should have been anyway. He wasn't taken. He's a superstar.
Plays at the Hawks. Used to play at Melbourne.
Oh,
defender. He's known for his pace. Very
Frost.
Yeah, Sam Frost. Taken. Very agile.
Jeez, I've underachieved. That was a pretty good rookie draft.
What is your most amount of disposals in an AFL game, and what club was it against?
This one's. We'll go with 28 against the Bulldogs.
It was 27 against the Bulldogs. I'm going to give that because.
Yeah. Basically, I was wearing a glove that day, so that's how I remember it, because my good mate...
Grip or...
It was played in Darwin, and it's just impossible to hold the footy there, and I think Rob Forrest still gives me grief about wearing my glove and always brings it up every time it's a wet weather game or it's a bit of humidity at training. So.
Another sort of... it's not disposals, but on the 5th of May 2012, what club did you get a fantasy score of 123 against?
When? 5th of May.
5th of May 2012. 123, that's pretty good.
Fremantle?
It was Fremantle.
Yeah, second game.
Was that a here or?
Nah, that was at Metricon. Yeah, I got really lucky that day. I remember coming off the... was it here? Nah, it was definitely a Metricon.
I think 301.
Freo just won. Yeah. I remember coming off the bench and the ball sort of got switched, took a mark, kicked it down the line, kept running, and the ball got hit to me, kicked it again. The ball got hit to me again and kicked it, and, you know, you've had three touches in 10 seconds being on the ground, and, you know, all that nervous energy is gone, and then you sort of just run around and do what you want after that. So, yeah, that was pretty much luck of the draw, that game.
Yeah. Question 5. How many Gold Coast players are still on the list from your last year in 2013? And a bonus point if you can guess how many are now playing for Victorian clubs.
Ooh, Rory Thompson, Harbs, Sam Day, Secco, Day Swallow.
I was counting them last night, so yeah. I hope this is correct. I trust it is.
Oh, I'm trying to think. Lonergan's not there anymore. 5 at Gold Coast?
6 and how many at Victorian clubs? It's probably not as many as you would think.
There's 3 at Richmond.
There's been a lot of departures.
Yeah, hasn't there? Maisie, Harley, 5?
8.
Oh, 8?
Yeah. So
who'd I miss?
Haven't got it here. I can be able to find it for you after, but... Waffle question.
Oh, Aaron Hall. Forgot about Hall. He's there. He's in North Melbourne now.
Have you had more kicks or handballs in your waffle career? And a bonus point. What is the bonus point for the differential?
Definitely more kicks.
Yeah. How many more?
Oh, I don't know. How many have I had on each? Don't say that, actually. What's the total of disposals?
You haven't got that?
Oh, we'll just go. I don't know. 100?
According to the Waffle website... I'm not sure if this seems more than you, but it says 1,004 more.
More kicks than handballs?
Yeah.
More dream team points. That's incredible, actually. It's a lot more kicks.
Yeah, you said you didn't really care about the Sandover, but how many votes in the Sandover did you get last year?
Oh, no idea. One short. I know that much. What was it, 3-2-1s? I don't know, 20 something, 26?
27.
Oh, one off every time.
Question 8. What 2 AFL grounds did you have the equal most amount of wins at?
Oh, I only had 2 wins, so it can't be that hard. Metricon.
Yeah, it's two grounds.
Metricon obviously had 1.
Yeah, Metricon 1.
Who did we beat?
You did talk about it before. You mentioned this ground.
Oh. Did we win up there in the NT? I had 2 wins and I can't remember. That's how well Manfred's career went. Now all I got is Metricon.
Well, it was Metricon and the MCG.
Oh, the G.
Yeah.
Is that right? That can't be right.
Well, according to sources, I hope it is. But
I had 2 shockers at the MCG. I got subbed and then I didn't get a kick in the other one. Yeah. So not my favourite hunting.
You never rely on the internet too much. Question 9, bit of a double question. How many Subiaco players played in the state game last year, and how many players in the current Subi squad have been on an AFL list? So just on a list, doesn't have to play a game.
I think we had 7 in the state game.
It was 5.
Oh, that's right, 2 boys pulled out. We'll go with that anyway. In my memory.
You can say 7 when named.
Newt. 5 6 6 I'm not going well here. 6
I'll try and name it. I don't have it here, but so obviously you
I left myself off. Yeah,
Marsh.
Six, six, yeah.
Litherland, Lockyer, Newton, and Powell.
Yeah,
he was a rookie. And then question 10, lastly, it's a who am I? So we finish off with a who am I. I was born on September 20, 1984 and was picked 42 in the 2006 rookie draft of Fremantle without playing a game.
Oh, Darren Rumble.
He's got it. I'll finish it off, but I retired at the end of 2015 as a six-time Waffle Premiership player as a fullback. It was Darren Rumble.
Yeah, the superstar.
I think you've passed, I think.
We're passed? Yeah, it's all right. Ooh.
Yeah, well, we're doing that for the upcoming cricket season, but you're the first one to do that usually because I'm the only one here. We usually do the quiz against five questions against one of the other boys. But before we finished, Kyle, I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I think all our listeners have as well. Very grateful for the response for the text in the first place. As a Subi fan myself, hopefully you get the win this week and can get the job done. Any last words?
No, thanks for having me, mate. It's funky, this place. It's a bit of artwork going on. There's a bit going on in the air, but yeah, great setup, and love the show, and keep pushing on.
On that note, get on the socials if you haven't already. It's as simple as that, at Centre Square Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and even YouTube. Watch this space. Goodbye for now. I appreciate all the support and everyone who listened along. And we'll see you very soon on the Centre Square Podcast coming at you from 91.3 Sport FM, your football headquarters.